This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For the first time in 5 years, the Supreme Court has agreed to hear an abortion case, specifically a case that raises the issues of parental notification and the health of the mother. A New Hampshire law obliges doctors to inform the parents of a pregnant minor 48 hours before an abortion, unless there's a medical emergency. Most states now have some kind of parental involvement law. Some require notification of one or both parents. Some require not just notification, but a parent's permission. Most people wouldn't argue with a parent's right to know about their child's welfare, but not all teens live in supportive home environments. Some argue that notification laws may drive girls in dysfunctional or abusive family situations to another state or even to unsafe back-alley abortions. First, we'll look into what's at stake legally, but for most of this hour, we'll focus on what happens before the law is even involved. If you're a teenager or a parent who's faced this situation, we want to hear your story. Did you tell your parents? Did your daughter talk to you? What did you talk about? And what did you do? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Later in the program, a critical referendum on the European Constitution this weekend. Public opinion polls suggest that France will vote no. David Savage joins us now. He's the Supreme Court reporter for the Los Angeles Times, and he's with us from his office here in Washington, D.C. Always nice to have you on the program, David.
Hi, Neil.
First of all, give us the specifics on this New Hampshire law and the challenge to it.
Well, as you said, it starts out as a fairly narrow issue. It's not a question of whether the state can have a parental notification law. It's whether the law must make an exception for medical emergencies. The New Hampshire law says something like there must be parental notification except if it's an abortion is necessary to prevent the death of the young girl. So the ACLU and Planned Parenthood sued and said, what about a severe health emergency? You don't want a situation where a doctor has a young girl who's bleeding or something like that and can't get an abortion. A federal judge and the U.S. Court of Appeals in Boston essentially agreed with that claim. They said the Supreme Court has said many times in the past that a state can't stand in the way of a woman's decision to get an abortion when her life or health is at stake. And so those courts struck down the law entirely.
And so on the theory that the law addressed the life of the mother, but not necessarily her health.
That's right, that the law was missing an important ingredient that the law must have. I should say there's sort of a secondary, sort of abstract issue here that could prove quite important. And it sort of goes like this. Suppose you're a judge and you're faced with that situation, this very situation. Should you strike down the law entirely and wipe it off the books, or should you say, well, 99% of the girls, young girls, are not going to have a health emergency, mm-hmm. and parental notification is okay in principle. Maybe I should uphold the law and just say if any young girl has a problem, she should go to a judge and seek a waiver. The Supreme Court's pattern in these cases is to strike down laws across the books and say, if it could unconstitutionally hurt the rights of some women, then the law itself is unconstitutional on its face. But Chief Justice Rehnquist and Justice Scalia in particular have said, no, we ought to uphold the law and say if an individual person, if an individual woman has a particular complaint, we ought to decide that case on a case-by-case basis, or a judge should decide it on a case-by-case basis. The reason I'm mentioning all this is because that's the issue the New Hampshire state attorneys raised, this sort of broader question about how to view abortion laws, and the Supreme Court granted their appeal. Hmm. So there's at least a possibility that they're taking this case to sort of rule more broadly that, as a general matter, the laws should stand, and these should become case-by-case challenges.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, the court has not heard an abortion case for 5 years now. Why this case? Why now?
Well, I think the 5 years is explained by the fact that they don't particularly want to take these very difficult regulatory cases. They are somewhat minor questions. They are very contentious. The court is closely split on it, so they have passed on a number of these regulatory cases. And the why now question, my best guess is that at least four of them are interested in this sort of abstract issue I was talking about whether we should strike the laws down on their face or whether we should apply a sort of individual case-by-case approach. And if they adopt the latter, then it will change the abortion litigation quite a bit because, as I say, the pattern has been to this point is to say if there's a flaw in the law, we strike down the whole law.
Mm-hmm. And you say at least four justices had to be interested in it because that's how many it takes to accept a case.
Yes, that's right. It takes four votes to grant an appeal.
And they would hear these arguments next fall?
That's correct.
And then get a decision by?
Well, you never know. 2, 3, 4 months, presumably the first half of next year.
And tell us, at this point, there are an awful lot of states, the majority of them, that have parental notification laws, but they require a whole number of different things.
That's right. There's always a lot of, this has been a disputed area, it's about 33 states have laws on the books that require either notification or consent, one or the other. Going back to the early 80s, the Supreme Court sort of upheld these laws in principle. However, they said, in special situations, you always need to leave an option for a young girl to go to a judge and get a waiver, because you can imagine awful situations where there's been a sexual abuse or any number of terrible things could have happened, and the young girl shouldn't be absolutely forced to notify her parents or get her parents' consent. So the Supreme Court's always had this sort of compromise view, which is, yes, you can have these laws, but you also need to leave an option for the girl to get a waiver.
David Savage, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
David Savage covers the Supreme Court for the Los Angeles Times. He joined us from his office here in Washington, D.C. Well, to look at how these laws and these issues have played out in one state, joining us now is Moreau Robbins, legal affairs reporter for the San Antonio Express News. He's with us from their office in Austin, Texas. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you.
What does the law in Texas on parental notification require?
The law here requires that abortion providers must give 48 hours notice to the parents of a pregnant minor before actually performing the abortion.
And is there an exception for the health and the life of the mother?
That's right. The law lets a minor go to court and ask a judge to let her get the procedure without telling her parents, but it requires the minor to prove to the judge that she is sufficiently well-informed about the decision, is mature, or alternatively, that telling her parents might result in abuse.
Sufficiently well-informed? What does that mean?
The law itself was vague, and so it was up to the Texas Supreme Court to define it. And the majority of the court finally decided that a minor was well-informed if she had consulted a health care provider about the status of the pregnancy and what was involved in an abortion, if she knew about the child support laws that required a father to help support a child, and she had considered alternatives to abortion, such as adoption or keeping the child, and then thirdly, that the minor had consulted a reliable source about possible emotional fallout from an abortion and whatever possible effect the abortion might have on the relationship with her parents and other family members.
Was this played out in a on a sort of theoretical basis, challenging the law, or was there a case involved?
It's been implemented hundreds of times. Sort of the first time that it went to court was in 2000 and was challenged, and that was the case of a 17-year-old high school senior who became pregnant but had planned on going to college and having a career, and who also had religious parents who she believed might stop her from getting an abortion or might even disown her. And so she went to court and argued that she was well-informed. And to do that, she told the court that she had talked to a close relative who had had an abortion at 17. She had talked to another teenager who had had an abortion. She also talked to a married 15-year-old who was struggling to go to school and raise children. Additionally, she had talked to the teacher of her high school parenting class and had met twice with a Planned Parenthood counselor.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, yes.
A Planned Parenthood counselor, and had read their literature. And additionally, she had seen the fetus on an ultrasound. Ultimately, the court did decide that she was well-informed enough and did let her get the procedure, but it was not without some debate, and some judges felt that she wasn't well-informed.
Was this at a time when, I'm just curious, Priscilla Owen, a Texas Supreme Court justice, was she on the Supreme Court then?
Yes, she was. In fact, she was among the judges who felt that the minor was not informed enough.
Priscilla Owen, I should point out, one of President Bush's disputed judicial nominees, and her appointment to, I think it's the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans, was confirmed today, earlier today, by the U.S. Senate. That's sort of why I raised it. How often do issues, do minors go to court? You told us 100 times it's been applied?
No, it's at least the last numbers I saw are a few years old, but the law went into effect in 1999, and by 2002, it had been used about 500 times. So, and there's not firm records on that, but that was the best guess that people put together by studying the issue.
And is this a live issue in the state of Texas?
Yes, there's still debate in the legislature at this point. Still, bills that have been put as recently as this session that would take it a step further and would require parents' actual permission. Instead of just being notified, it would require parents to agree to the abortion.
Moreau Robbins, thanks very much. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Moreau Robbins covers the courts for the San Antonio Express News, and he joined us from that paper's bureau in Austin, Texas. When we come back from a short break, we'll talk with parenting experts about how notification laws play out between teens and their families. And really, we want to talk with you about what happens before the law is invoked, about communication with your children and their communication with you. If this happened to you, if you were in this situation, did you talk to your parents? Did your daughter talk to you? What did you talk about, and what did you decide? Give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address, totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. We're back after the break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This fall, as we mentioned earlier, the Supreme Court will hear arguments in a case involving parental notification laws for girls seeking abortions. The case is likely to rouse political passions on all sides, but that overlooks the far more personal terrain on which each of these decisions is made. Every pregnant teen who considers an abortion lives within her own constellation of family values, relationships, pressures. Today, we want to hear those stories. If you've ever had to go through this experience as a teen facing an unexpected pregnancy, as a parent who was told or wasn't, as a friend or family member who took part in this decision, give us a phone call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Sarah Brown, director of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy. She's talked with many teens and their parents about the delicate issues around an unplanned pregnancy, and she's here with us in Studio 3A. Nice to see you again, Sarah.
Thanks.
What do you hear from teens about this dilemma?
Well, the overwhelming report from them is that when they realize they're pregnant and they think they have to reveal that to a parent, they're just terrified. They're scared. They're embarrassed. They're enormously upset. A young woman will commonly say, "I think my parents will kill me." They may not mean that literally, but it's a measure of how absolutely frightened they are about this. I mean, I've often thought that, disappointing a parent is one of the primal fears of a child, even in the most disorganized family. Mm-hmm. To have your mother or father say, "How could you do that? I'm so disappointed," for some teens will seem even more terrifying than the burden of maybe raising a child, because it's immediate. Mm-hmm. It's, "I have to do this right now." And it's simply overwhelming to them.
Well, a lot of teenagers will say, "My parents are going to kill me if they're coming home late on a date."
That's right. Imagine having to say that you're pregnant. And of course, sort of on the flip side, the parents are often unaware. I mean, the majority of parents, particularly of young teens, aren't even aware that their children are having sex, if they are. Mm-hmm. So imagine if you're not even aware that your 15 or 16-year-old might be having sex. Imagine how unaware you might be of them being pregnant. So these early encounters when this issue is joined are some of the most difficult that any family faces, hands down.
What can parents do so that things, obviously you help people work to prevent teenage pregnancies. This is your job in life. How do you work with parents to try to prevent this in the first place?
Well, I think the principal question a parent has to ask him or herself is, do I want to be the one that my child can go to if this monster happens, if we have an unintended pregnancy at a young age? And if the answer is yes, as much as it would upset me, as much as it might disappoint me, if I want to be the one or one of the first ones, what that means is I have to focus over many years in talking openly and candidly and warmly with my children about sex, love, and relationships. Now, that doesn't mean I don't have a point of view. It doesn't mean I don't have values to communicate and so forth. But we have quite a bit of data showing that close parent-child relationships over many years about lots of things, not just sex, that seems to be one of the most protective things parents can do. So, you know, it's the same old message. Parents have to be parents. They have to know where their young people are, know who their friends are, talk openly and candidly about these issues that face their children, so that when the unexpected happens, and it does, you know, we have about 850,000 pregnancies among teenagers each year in this country, that parent is not considered a source of abject terror and fear. Maybe embarrassment, but not terror.
We really want to hear from listeners this hour, and let's begin with Terry. Terry's calling us from San Antonio, Texas.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
What I wanted to share was that some decades ago now, for lack of wanting to reveal my age, I was in a similar situation, doing well in school, first boyfriend, accident. Absolutely never occurred to me to discuss this situation with my parents. I knew where they stood on the subject. I knew what my decision was going to be, and life has been peaceful in my house, and we get along. I have a close relationship with my parents to this day. I feel that I preserved that relationship in part because I did not share this information with them.
Ever?
Ever.
And just to clarify, you were under the age of 18 at the time?
Yes.
And was there a law in the state in which you were living?
No, there was not a law at the time. This was some 20 years ago.
You know,
there was not a law regarding parental notification at the time. Had there been, I would have done whatever it took to get around that law.
Go ahead, Sarah. I'm sorry.
Well, that's what a lot of young people will say, even if there is a law in place. They say, I have to find some way through this without facing this terror. And, you know, this caller is quite right. These conversations, you know, the moment where you have to reveal that you're pregnant and then there's reaction, often the parent is shocked and often very angry. Those moments can alter a family relationship in all perpetuity. It's an unguarded moment sometimes, and all of the issues of fears and rage and guilt and so forth can just play out around the kitchen table in a stormy hour and a half on a Tuesday night, and people may not be able to work on through that. So, again, the message for parents is to think in advance about how would I handle that, and to try and think through the options, the messages, and the love and care that I think most parents hope to extend to their children.
One of the things I'm hoping to convey is that in some cases, and I would put my parents in this case, they're lovely, amazing people. And there is absolutely no resolution that we could have come to in our family that would have resulted in joy around this decision. I've seen them react to similar situations with other people, and decades down the line, they're still talking about it, and it's still an issue of contention.
My
relationship with them, I think, has been preserved in part because they were not part of this decision. It was none of their business, and it will never be any of their business.
You know, there's another perspective on this, too. Sometimes parents surprise their children. You know, they have feelings about an issue, not just about abortion, but, you know, the big issues of the day. They feel strongly about it. They announce at the dinner table how they feel about it over many years. But when it is their child, sometimes the logjam moves. Not always, but often in a counseling situation, you know, the counselor will talk with the young person saying, are we absolutely certain that, you know, your furniture will be put in the hall and you'll be cut off from the family forever? Parents love their children deeply. And when they're in crisis, which is surely what this is, particularly for the younger teens, after a period of disorganization, and again, sometimes rage and very bad behavior, a number of parents do try and come around. I'm not saying that's true in your instance. Don't misunderstand me.
I just anticipate being thrown out of the house.
Yeah.
I did not anticipate any violence or any consequences of that nature.
Right.
In my particular case.
I wonder, Terry, if this was 20 years ago, if you've gone on and had children, they may be approaching that age now. I wonder if you, as a parent, would want to know.
That's a real tough call. That's a real tough call. I certainly am in a position where I wish that when my children come to a decision like that, that they could come to me. But again, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I know very well why I didn't share this information with mine, and I'm sure there's plenty that they're not telling me. And that's just kind of how it is between parents and children sometimes.
Well, and that's one of the reasons that young people in crisis will often turn, at least initially, to someone other than their parent. I mean, the parent-child relationship is so intense and so loaded and has so many levels that sometimes an aunt, a relative, a teacher, so forth, is a safer place to go first. And you'll often hear young people say, that, well, first I told so-and-so and so-and-so, and then together, that young woman, perhaps with, you know, with this other adult, will go together to then talk to the parents. That's not at all unusual.
Terry, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Joining us now is Kay Heimowitz. She's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, author of Liberation's Children, Parents and Kids in a Postmodern Age, and she's with us from her home in Brooklyn, New York. Kay Heimowitz, nice to have you back on the program as well.
Hi, Neil.
I wonder, what are your thoughts on the laws on parental notification and a minor's access to abortion?
Well, what troubles me about the idea of children being able to go get abortions without notifying their parents is that it's I can think of no other area where we say to the government where the government says to children, sure, you don't want to talk to your parents about this, we will support you and guide you through this without talking to them. Can kids get a tattoo without talking to their parents? No. Can they leave school early without getting parental permission? No, they can't. So we're in a very odd position where in some places you have to get permission from your parents to leave school to get the abortion, but you don't have to get permission from them, or rather notify them about the abortion. Now, I should make a clear distinction here. There, on the one hand, we have permission consent, as it's sometimes called in the law,
mm-hmm.
and on the other hand, we have notification. The kinds of laws we're talking about are really notification, and it's always made a lot of sense to me that there should be such laws, and there certainly that they should be considered constitutional and up to the states to decide.
There are obviously also cases where girls come from dysfunctional or abusive homes. Normally, these laws have an exemption where they can then appeal to a judge for a waiver of notification or consent. Is that something that you would approve of?
Well, yes, although I've often wondered why it is that you need that judicial bypass. That's generally the way it's referred to. When it comes to an abortion, when it's clear that they, in those cases, in those families, the normal relationship has broken down anyway, and many of those families, I assume, are under the supervision of the government in some shape or form already.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure, I'm not sure that there's another way to think about it. The problem with judicial bypass, and I'm just raising problems here, not saying necessarily I'm against it. Problem is that, as in the case of your previous caller, there are many kids who will do whatever they can not to talk to their parents if the government gives them an opportunity to do that. And in many cases, the judges will say, I don't know. So this kid seems mature enough to me. I'll say yes. It depends completely on the whim of the judge. And that doesn't seem like a great arrangement either.
Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Laura. Laura's with us from Northampton, Massachusetts.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to offer another perspective. About 24 years ago, I was faced with an unplanned pregnancy. I was a senior in high school. Similar story to the first caller, living in Texas at the time. And I chose to tell my mother. Of course, I had chosen at the time to have an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And It was through the urging of the vice principal at my high school, who was a wonderful woman, encouraged me to talk to my mother, and I did. I was frightened. I was so scared, but I did it. And I got exactly what I wasn't expecting, which was an incredible amount of support and love and encouragement. And she had actually encouraged me not to have an abortion, and I really thought that this was going to be an obstacle in my path that I could not overcome. I went to the clinic and literally at the last minute changed my mind, and I fortunately had the means to support myself. I was able to go to college full time and get my degree and raise my child, who is now 24 and is a wonderful young man. But I had a relationship with my mother that was very different from, I think, most of my peers at that time. I was surprised at how loving and caring she handled it, and it, through this process had shared with me a similar experience she had had as a young college student. And, you know, there wasn't, abortion was illegal at the time that she had this experience, and she made a promise to herself that if any of her daughters ever was faced with it, that she would handle things differently. And so it changed our, the dynamic of our relationship, and we are so incredibly close. And I'm very grateful that I had the courage to share with her. And now as a parent of three boys, I have all boys, I'm very, very close with them. We have a very open relationship, and I know that that comes from really creating that from the very beginning. Now, I know there's a lot that I don't know about in their lives, but I hope that they do feel comfortable sharing with me, and so far they have shared some difficult things, but for me it was a good thing for me to do. I don't know if I could recommend that it become law, though, for other children, because not every family is as functional as ours was. So
we're talking about parental notification and abortion. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Laura, so have you talked with your children? You say they're all boys, but nevertheless, it does take two to get involved in this.
Right. Well, they know what happened to me as a young woman, and we've been very open about sharing that experience. And they know that that no matter what, I love them no matter what, and that there are going to be times in their lives that they do things that might disappoint me, but that my love will always be with them no matter what. And I think that that's an important message to convey to children.
Sarah?
This caller is clearly a woman who has decided actively that she wants to be available to her children to deal with the issues that life throws at you. And she said, really, in such beautiful way, what I was alluding to earlier, which is that if you want to be the one that your children can go to, you need to have this kind of close relationship that she just described so well, so that they do not say, literally, my mother will kill me.
Mm-hmm. And Kay Heimowitz, as you listen to Laura's story, this is the way it should play out.
Oh, I think so. You know, it's interesting. When these laws were first being generated in the late 70s and early 80s, the reason that people were so upset about them was that they assumed, and I think a lot of listeners are assuming, perhaps even even you, Neil, are assuming that the problem was that there would be parents who would force their children to bear children that they didn't want to have. That you would have a bunch of kind of redneck parents who would, you know, either threaten the kids, their children who wanted to have abortions, or kick them out of the house and that sort of thing.
It wouldn't have been an issue in my family. My mother would have killed me. But
My mother, too, Neil.
Yeah, mine, too.
Yeah.
So there we are.
Yeah, right. But what I was going to say is that, that there are a lot of stories out there, aren't there? I mean, the story we just heard is one. And these days, interestingly enough, the attitude towards abortion among young people has shifted, so that you see more support for abortion among baby boomers, my generation, than you do actually among young people. Perhaps Sarah has the data on this, but there has been a steady, fairly steady decline in support for abortion among young people.
Sarah, do you...
Well, there's also been a decline in abortion, which I think is an important thing to underscore here. The underlying pregnancy rate is going down, teen abortion is going down, teen births are going down. And I think that, that sort of the solid direction we're all heading is the big picture here. What these court cases are about and this particular discussion is about is sort of at the margin of what is a really a good story, which is less pregnancy amongst teenagers.
Laura, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
When we come back from a short break, we'll continue our discussion on how families handle teen pregnancy and abortion, and an update from France, where voters may decide the fate of the EU Constitution this weekend. That's after the break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about parental notification laws, how parents and teens deal with unplanned pregnancies. We want to hear your stories. If you're a medical professional who's had to enforce a notification law, a teen or a parent who struggled with this decision, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our guests are Sarah Brown, director of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy, and Kay Heimowitz, a contributing editor to City Journal and a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Susan. Susan's with us from La Jolla in California.
Hello.
Hi.
I had an abortion when I was 15 years old, and I was having unprotected sex at the time. And part of the reason for that was because my parents are extremely conservative Republicans, and my mother chose not to ever speak to me about sex or protected sex. I did choose to tell my mother because I was terrified and didn't even know how to go about having an abortion.
And how did that conversation go?
It was incredibly wonderful. My mother, despite the fact that she was, you know, appalled that I had been having sex, appalled that I had been having unprotected sex, was able to find a very deep compassion within her to realize that for me to, first of all, be pregnant, and secondly, to even try to have a baby would have been a very traumatizing experience. You know, my parents have six kids, and for them, pregnancy and childbirth is a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they were able to understand that for me it was a quite different situation. And I follow abortion politics and conversations and issues very avidly, and I'm really concerned that I very rarely hear the word compassion when people speak about abortion, especially with young women, because I think that is almost more important than the idea of women's rights or even legal issues.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that many people who are pro-life don't have compassion and don't try to understand that pregnancy and childbirth is not right for everybody.
I wonder, Susan, just getting back to your story for a moment, you were 15 years old. Did you and your parents get the boy involved in the conversation and his parents?
No.
Did you tell your parents who the father was?
I did. And actually, funnily enough, the boy, the young man, did come down to be with me when I had the abortion. And my father, who I was literally afraid would, you know, kill me, as you said earlier, you know, came into my room at one point and said, you know, I'm really upset with this young person, and you know, I'm upset with you, but I love you, and so, you know, I'll allow him to be with you while you have this abortion. And, you know, my parents are both healthcare practitioners, and maybe that's why they were able to find this compassion. I'm not sure, but, you know, I was extremely lucky, and many, many women are not as lucky as I am, and they often get overlooked. There's this idea that, you know, women can just go and talk to somebody and decide that abortion's not right for them and have a baby and everything will be right and perfect. And that's just not the way it goes. It's not reality.
Susan, thank you so much for the phone call.
Okay.
We appreciate it. Sarah and Kay, I wanted to ask you, I did ask her about the boys' involvement here, because clearly they have to play a role too. Kay Heimowitz?
Well, one would hope so, but you know, I think inevitably when you have a young person, a 15-year-old as in this case, who is pregnant, it's the relationship with the boy may or may not be a big part of what she's going through. And what I mean by that is just that she, you know, kids have sex for all kinds of reasons and in all kinds of relationships. Ideally, sure, if a child has gotten pregnant, it's because she's in love and very close to a young man, but it's not always the case. And I'm not sure how much families want to involve the young man. It seems to me this is a very personal question and depends on the situation.
Sarah?
Well, I think this raises the issue of parents taking the time to actually find out what has happened. A lot of people will just make assumptions that maybe it's the steady boyfriend or whatever. They will jump to conclusions. In fact, if you talk with young women who've had these pregnancies, there are many, many stories. There are stories of older men who've gotten them pregnant, the boyfriend in the house of the mother. There are stories of date rape, of girls passing out at parties and not knowing what happened to them. Sometimes there's love, true. But it's a very sensitive and critically important thing to know, in fact, what did happen to this young girl. And I do think that there's a lot more interest now in involving the young man. For example, if this young woman chooses to carry this baby to term, we now have much stricter enforcement of child support and paternity. So, you know, we have to say to these young men, you know, you will be a father. You will be responsible for this child. And it doesn't matter if you move to another state or enlist in the military. And that is largely something that's developed more strongly in the last few years. So, you know, the notion that this is just one person now, I think, is beginning to erode. I think people are beginning to understand that there's more involved here than just the girl.
Let's talk now with Lucy. Lucy's calling from Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Yes, hi. Yes, I've worked extensively as a volunteer in this area. I accompanied girls to court as a volunteer for 7 years, hundreds of girls, and spent a good bit of time with each.
And this is in a state, presumably, where they're going to court so that they don't have to notify their parents?
It's to get a judicial bypass.
And right.
I just won't say where it was. We've moved from the area. That's the only reason I stopped doing it.
Uh-huh.
But it was set up extremely well there. The court process was very simple. The judges were sympathetic. We didn't use the judges that weren't. We had the option. All the people that dealt with these girls were very sympathetic. It was very clear that the only issue the judge was supposed to consider was the maturity of the girl. But I would talk to them a lot so that they would, you know, really have be very clear in case the judge asked them any questions. Of course, they'd already been through counseling, but those girls, you know, really can use all the counseling they can get. But what I found was a woman who was saying that if the family is dysfunctional, then, you know, she's picturing social workers. Not so. I'd say half these very level-headed girls, and they all had plans for college, just about all of them, but I'd say half of them came from dysfunctional families, but they were below the radar screen, you know? Mm-hmm. The parents were on drugs, they were alcoholic, a lot of times it was a single-parent household, and the mother was so stressed out working three jobs or with illness or with some disaster in her own life that the girl didn't go to her just because she just didn't want to cause her mother any more stress.
Were there instances where the judge said, no, I think you do need to talk to your parents?
No, that never did happen. The judges sometimes would say, each judge was different, and they rotated, so there'd be a new crop every year. But they were prone to say that, well, first of all, they'd make it clear that just because the girl got the permission didn't mean she had to follow through and have the abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Although, to my knowledge, they all did. I can think of maybe one or two instances where the girl didn't, but they would also say, some of them would say, if you feel you can share this with your parents, then you should.
Mm.
But they understood.
Yeah.
You know, they're in juvenile court. They see kids from, you know, messed up kids all day long, every day, and they could see these were not messed up kids. These were girls with a plan. These were girls who saw a bright future for themselves. That really was the situation, and I saw it hundreds of times.
Kay Heimowitz, let me bring you in here. This was the nexus of the state and the family that you were concerned about.
Yes, well, I'm still a little uncomfortable with the story that Lucy is telling, because essentially what you have is the judge, that is the representative of the state, who is saying to a young person, you tell me that your family is dysfunctional. I'm going to act as the family here, in lieu of the family here. And in most cases, my guess is that the judges don't know all that much about the reality of the situation. They know what the child is telling them. I think that we just need to be a little cautious here about what this represents, because it does say that the government has this role, which is essentially to say, oh, you don't want to tell your parents? Okay, it's okay by us.
Sarah, and I'm afraid we just have a few seconds left.
You know, an additional consideration here is that as the time goes by where everybody's investigating and learning more, of course, the pregnancy is proceeding. And there has been some concern that the more protracted these court hearings and so on and so forth, that it might increase the proportion of teens who do elect abortion to go into the second trimester, which is riskier and, of course, more controversial. It's just one other dimension of this sort of talking, investigating, learning, and consulting.
Lucy, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Obviously, this is a conversation we could continue, and probably we will, when the Supreme Court takes up the arguments on the parental notification issues come this fall. I'd like to thank our guest, Kay Heimowitz. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Kay Heimowitz, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, joined us by phone from her home in Brooklyn, New York. And Sarah Brown was with us here in Studio 3A. She's director of the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy. Thanks very much for coming in.
Always a pleasure.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.